If you live in Los Angeles, you know it is expensive and there's a shortage of affordable housing. Meet my guest, an investor and entrepreneur who'd co-founded Upfront Ventures. And of the 220 plus startups his team funded, you may know some names: Costco, Starbucks, PetSmart, Ulta Beauty, Bird, and Office Depot. But today, Stephen Dietz is talking California's housing crisis. Oh, yeah. We welcome my guest here, Stephen Dietz. Dietz. All right. See, people get my name Divine Devine. We're going with Dietz.
Fair enough.
Stephen Dietz, CEO of United Dwelling. All right. What is that company?
What we do is we build affordable housing. And we do it in a way that has just not been doable up until the last year or so. With the new rules in the state of California that let you add a second dwelling unit on a property, an ADU, we partner with homeowners in low and middle income communities who live in great neighborhoods and they have some incredibly underutilized real estate that's valuable. It's typically a detached two-car garage. And what we found in 91% of the houses, that garage is full of junk. Mm-hmm. Which
we do accumulate a lot in this day and age, don't we?
We do. And I meet lots of people, and I actually found one house. They had five generations of aged lawnmowers. Every decade, they get rid of one.
And time
they
for a yard sale.
Back. No, I don't think you can even sell a 45-year-old lawnmower.
Okay.
But what we do is we partner with a homeowner. We lease that piece of real estate from them, that garage. We remove it and put in a small home, an ADU, and then we find an amazing tenant who's a good fit for the homeowner and rent it out. We manage everything and we share the rental income with the homeowner. So it really works well for everyone. The homeowner gets stable income. We're bearing the risk of occupancy, not the homeowner. So there's no cost to them in any way. And because we have really good quality real estate at a low price, and because we can build inexpensively, we rent inexpensively.
All right, so somebody has a home. It has to be in a garage that's already there, or do you build from scratch?
Most cases, probably over 80%, there's a detached two-car garage. In LA County, there's 258,000 of them.
I have a house like that.
Yeah. They're common. That's how houses were built between about 1905 and 1957.
Okay. So you really have a structure that's already there.
We tear it down.
You do?
Yeah. We tear it down and replace it. That was never designed to be a garage, a home rather. It doesn't have proper footings for walls. It's not safe in an earthquake. But the reason we use the detached two-car garage is the space is already there and it's not being used. So it's not changing the way the homeowner uses their yard. If we were to go in the backyard, there's nowhere for the kids to play anymore. But by basically displacing all the old junk that's in there, mm-hmm. it doesn't change how the house gets used.
Okay. Now, I have a combo of junk and cars. So people who do park their car in this garage, what do they then do?
We may not be a fit for everybody, but what we found, we did a fairly large survey, 91% of the garages just had junk.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. What does that say about society that we accumulate so much?
And you leave your car on the driveway.
Right. Okay. So that's the typical person you're looking for. You approach them. How do you find this person?
So we start, LA is a huge place.
Yeah.
We focus on a few particular areas. Basically, the 6 Expo line stops west of USC, within about a mile of them. Inglewood and Cedar Sinai area. That right now is the area that we're focused on. And there happen to be a lot of detached two-car garages there. And then we market to homeowners in that community. We use some radio, some direct mail. And once we start building, we'll only start construction if we're doing 5 homes at a time within about a 2-minute drive. It keeps our costs down. It makes it easier to manage the properties. And because we need that density, the homeowners actually do a lot of talking among themselves. Over half of our leases are word of mouth.
Okay, so I always said if I were to move, I'd want to be by one of the train stations because I think Metro is really such an easy way to get around SoCal.
And yes.
It's nice. So you are in this area that we're talking about right now. And let's say I'm a person who might be a worthy contender for your project. You knock on the door and say, we have this idea. What do you think?
We started by knocking on the door, but it's a little strange.
Okay.
And it's not terribly efficient. We typically approach people through direct mail, but as I said, over half of our leases are actually word of mouth. It's one homeowner who's doing it, telling their neighbors, hey, this is a neat opportunity. Yeah.
Okay, so let's say you make contact with somebody. What's the first start?
We really just tell them what the program is. It's relatively straightforward. We tell them, we ask them how they're using the garage. We talk to them about what we do. And the process is actually quite quick. The homeowner decision process, we found, has only been taking a couple weeks.
So the homeowner then has to clear that stuff out? That's their responsibility?
Yes.
Okay, so you say you get rid of the stuff.
We find we need to help
them
a bit.
Yeah, there's a whole show called Hoarders, right?
Yes.
Yeah, all right. So you help them get that garage emptied out.
Yeah.
Then you do the teardown process. How long does it take to do the teardown and have a place up and available?
Right now, we're at about 8 weeks. From the moment the homeowner perceives we're doing stuff, we're doing things in the background for a good 6 weeks before around permitting and design work. But from the homeowner's perspective, it's roughly 8 weeks right now from the time they first see somebody show up on the property working, taking down the garage, until we have a certificate of occupancy and a tenant. We should have that down to 3 weeks by the end of this year.
So basically, if I'm this homeowner, I'm watching my garage be torn down and rebuilt into a home that has, I take it, a bathroom, a kitchen, a closet, a
air conditioning, washer and dryer, full bath, full kitchen.
Wow.
It's a studio, but it's got all that.
What kind of space are we talking about? How big?
358 square feet.
Okay. So it's small space. You got to live small, minimally.
You know what? It is small, but the design firm that we used did a phenomenal job. And one of the things they did is they actually went out to almost 100 studio apartments and talked to the homeowners and did an inventory of everything they have. So we understood what needed to be stored. A lot of cabinets in the unit, and you need to have cabinets that will accommodate something like a broom, you know, something tall and skinny, and where does the dishwasher or laundry detergent go? And then we just a lot of interesting design things they did to make the space efficient.
You know, I think that can be a sign of the future of people living in a more minimal way, not being such a consumer kind of society where you can afford to live in the city you want to live in, but living maybe differently,
mm-hmm.
not so much the storage and the hoarder kind of situation. All right. So it's can a family live there or is it a single person?
It's really up to the homeowner. So it's critical to us that the homeowner be thrilled with the tenant. And we actually start this process. It's part of the conversation as the homeowner's making a decision. We talk to them about what they would like. We have a 76-year-old woman who lives alone. She really wanted somebody who had a medical background. And a perfect fit for her was an EMT at the local fire station who's presently commuting from Indio.
Did he move in there? That's his full-time place?
Yeah, it's not built yet. That one's not finished. But that conversation has moved along. Or a teacher from Lancaster who's commuting to South LA, and we'll start on that in probably about 9 or 10 weeks, is owned by a couple with a 2-year-old who lives 5 doors from her school. So we start by seeing who's a great fit, what does the homeowner want, and then we interview tenants. We price very cost effectively. We're about 20% below what a 1-bedroom in that community would cost.
20% below, so give or take, can you give me what? So this is someone's
rent, depends
right?
entirely on the neighborhood. In some neighborhoods, it'll be $1,395 a month, and others, such as around Cedars-Sinai, it could be as much as $2,100 or $2,200. The entire difference goes, that spread all goes to the homeowner. They're the ones who have the more valuable property.
Okay.
What we get paid is fixed.
So if I'm the renter, which is what they are, right? I'm the renter. And how long do they have to sign a lease for?
So we actually do our leases short term. It's 6 months and then goes month to month.
Okay. And then, so it's... I'm a renter, so I do 6 months, then month to month, and it's 20% lower, you say, than the given market in that area.
Generally about that, yeah.
For the same size space.
We're probably a little bit smaller than, from a space perspective, than what the alternative is, but we're also brand new construction.
I was going to say, brand new is nice.
And a standalone structure versus being in a 2-story walk-up where you go past 5 doors to get to your unit, and we have air conditioning and a washer and dryer in the unit.
What do neighbors think? Because obviously now you have an additional person or people, also more vehicles on the street there.
So the last one on more vehicles is actually not happening. It's almost the opposite. What we're looking for people who work in that community, the teachers, the firemen, social workers, who work there and cannot afford to live there. So presently, they're actually making long commutes. And now they have a place to live that's with an easy walk of work. We're finding about half of the tenants have no need for a car.
Well, and that's a sign, too, of the times of people who don't have a car. I mean, I know so many young people who don't have a car. Now, they rely a lot on Uber and that kind of transportation.
Correct.
Wow.
So it actually, we're not seeing issues. And then, as I said, about half of our leases are referrals from one neighbor to another. We've really encountered no opposition to what we do. And in many ways, you know, we're creating affordable housing. We're doing it in a very, very scalable way. We're doing it without requiring any money from the government to do it. So it's a great opportunity for the homeowners. About a third of our homeowners kind of 5 years either side of retirement age and are thinking about how can they afford to stay in their home. This is a stable source of income for them for a long period of time. A lot of them contemplate moving into it in 10 or 15 years as they get older. From the tenant's perspective, it's a great deal. The other interesting part of this is our labor, because what we do is really assembly. It's not construction. So the labor is relatively low skilled, and almost all of our on-site labor comes from a group in L.A. called Chrysalis.
I know Chrysalis.
Yeah, so most of our labor are people who are homeless themselves,
and
we give them full-time work.
Clothing to them. Yeah.
Well, one of the precursors to having a home is having a full-time job. So we provide, we give them the training. We do that in conjunction with a few partners and then employ them. So that's our workforce. And then our units, because we're building brand new, they're actually all zero net energy, zero net carbon. So they're it's
You're saying that means
works
lower
out
bills?
Really well. The electric bill in our unit, there'll be no gas bill because there's no gas into it. The electric bill probably run about $8 to $10 a month.
You're kidding me.
No. It just, you just don't need that. It's a small unit.
It's small,
it's well insulated, it's well designed. And two-thirds of the power consumption at that size is heating water, and we use solar on the roof to heat the water.
So it's a shower, not a bath kind of thing? It's a shower?
You know, we went back and forth a lot on that, and the first two units were shower tubs, and then we decided to get rid of that and just go with a stall shower. It's actually a good-sized shower, but... because we have so many of the homeowners who contemplate using it later as an aging-in-place solution, stepping over a bathtub into the shower is more difficult.
Gotcha. Okay. So I'm thinking I lived in the dorms in college. Is it that kind of concept, but you have, you know, a fully functional residence in space?
I don't think it's anything like a dorm. It's standalone.
Yeah.
It's in a neighborhood. Uh-huh. It's your own home. It's way bigger than your dorm room was.
Okay.
You've got your own bathroom there. You've got a full kitchen. No, it's a studio. It's
studio.
Like a studio apartment.
Okay. And then where do you find your tenants?
So since we're looking for tenants who work in the neighborhood, we actually go to the places of employment. Our first actually, so we, as I said, we build in groups. We call them a flight of four or five units at a time. Our first flight of four units, three of the homeowners are actually teachers or principals at local schools. So we already know those units will be entirely filled with teachers from those schools.
Okay.
But we'll talk to employers, and that's where we go.
And I love that the homeowners get a say in who you're renting to.
Oh, it's absolutely – it's critical that the homeowner's thrilled with the tenant. In fact, the reason for the 6 months is that if the homeowner's not happy with the tenant, after the 6 months we'll say, I'm sorry, this isn't working.
And
they
do
have
they
to be happy.
Have to have a relationship. I mean, obviously they're in fairly close quarters, being that the homeowner has the home, and then the new garage space is right there on their property. Is there a relationship that forms, or is that optional?
Well, it's certainly optional. We actually haven't really seen any close relationships form, but we're brand new at doing this. I suspect over time, like any other group of humans put together, some of them become close friends and some of them will rapidly decide they don't like each other. But in this case, if the homeowner says that, we will move the tenant out.
Gotcha. Okay. So this sounds very exciting. Talk about, when did you start with this?
2 years ago. It's just about 2 years ago now is when I found out what the ADU rules were. And then we spent the next 2 years figuring out how to make this work at a large scale. That involved getting some language into some state bills, AB 68 notably, was really helpful for us. And Department of Water Power and Department of Building and Safety have been great. They both had to change rules in order to accommodate ADUs and have been really receptive to it.
Okay, so I'm dying to hear your background. So, Stephen, let's talk about you.
Wait, okay.
Why are you doing this?
I was a venture capitalist for 30 years, and I spent that time finding great management teams and putting capital into small companies that, in some cases, became quite large. And that was fun. It was a good career for 30 years, but I reached a place I found I was getting a little bit bored with it and decided I could find something else that'd be exciting to do. Didn't know what it would be, but I sold my firm to my partners, and after about a year and a half of realizing I'll never hit a golf ball straight, found this and started working on it and just became captivated by it. There's a real opportunity to make a big difference.
So you're not from L.A., but you've been here long enough that we can pretty much say you're from L.A., right? You've been here
35 years.
Yeah, that counts. Okay. So did you have a concern about the affordable housing issue in L.A.?
Actually, I didn't. Okay. I live in a place I don't have to see it that much. But when I started reading about the rules, actually, for me, it was hearing about what the ADU rules were.
An ADU is what?
The accessory dwelling unit. The laws that the state passed that let you add a second dwelling unit on a single family property. What struck me as I was thinking about it was this great idea, but in low and middle income communities, there probably weren't a lot of families that had access to enough money to build them or the interest in managing them. But that's where the problem is.
I know how to even go about it. I think that might be an issue. How would I even think of this? How would I do this?
So I looked at it. I saw that and thought, okay, this my career has been built on identifying problems with great management teams and building businesses to solve that. And this is the largest problem the state of California faces now.
But
and it's entirely
it,
man-made.
What was it that made you care? I mean, because you could, like you said, could be off hitting golf balls, traveling the world, doing whatever you wanted to do, running for office.
I don't know about that one. Yeah, okay. It actually really started by, it was a very large, complex puzzle to fix. As I started getting into it and realizing the impact it had on people's lives, my motivation shifted. But initially, it was just because, hey, this is a huge problem, and I bet there's a way to fix it.
You know, I don't know if this relates to what you're doing at all, but I went to China this year. And so I had a fixation with China and all things China. And I saw a documentary story on how they created this kind of pod space in these high-rises where basically you open a room and they were almost like bunk beds, but you could lock your own bunk bed basically. So you crawl into your bunk bed, you lock in, you're safe for the night. And they asked the gentleman, well, how do you live in this small space? He goes, well, I don't really live here. I operate where I work. I'm out in the park. I eat out, but I have a safe place to sleep and I'm secure. So I think that we are looking worldwide at different ways for people to live safely.
If you want to do a really interesting story, there's a company in Venice called Haven that does exactly that. And it's not what you're trying to get out of this podcast, but you should talk to Ben Katz over there about what they do. You'll find it really, really interesting and who their tenants are.
Okay. So how would you say you fit in with your role in Los Angeles when we think of affordable housing, we think of the homelessness issue? Where are you in this real estate thing?
So we actually got a $1 million grant from L.A. County for their housing initiative, which was focused on housing for homeless people. In our case, what we build is not for people who are require support and who are homeless in the sense of living on the street in a tent.
And that's a good thing to clarify, because I think that, you know, I think people as they're listening would pick up on, you talked about the tenants already, the teacher, the EMT, the person who is a social worker. So I got the idea that you're looking for employed people who can care for themselves. We're not looking necessarily to solve the homelessness issue.
Well, it actually does, though, in a weird way. And this was the conversation I had with the county. Those people who are working full-time at jobs that require intelligence and skill, their challenge is pay. But when the weatherman says on a Tuesday, it's going to get really cold on Friday, they do what they should do. They get in their cars and they drive to the shelters and grab shelter beds because they need to take care of themselves.
Who does this?
That teacher.
Teachers are ending up in shelters, you think?
For a short term, for a night, if you're living in your car and you know it's going to get really cold, you will go grab a shelter bed on Tuesday because you've heard from the weatherman on Friday it's going to get really nasty.
So my parents were teachers, so let me get back to the idea of you're saying we have people who are employed as teachers living in their car?
I know of two of them, actually.
Wow, that's mind-blowing.
Social workers, EMTs, people who work for U.S. Customs at the ports of L.A. and Long Beach, the trainees in particular. That's part of what's been astounding to me as I've been doing this is realizing how widespread the affordability challenge is. So coming back to your question, when it does get cold and rainy, the people that we see living in a tent or under a bridge who have numerous challenges aside from being homeless, when they go look for shelter space when it's raining and cold, all the beds have been taken by the people who are very capable and just can't afford. So if we can provide affordable housing, that should have a cascading effect on a fairly broad set of the population.
So you are shedding really interesting light on an issue that I think we all see each and every day, the homelessness crisis in Southern California. We drive by it. It's in our work neighborhood here. I see people living in their motorhome down the street here as I go on a power walk on my lunch break. So we're all well aware of that. I think we don't always think of somebody who has a full-time job like a teacher living in their car.
I don't know the exact numbers, but from what I see and the people I talk to, well over half of the people who are homeless are working full-time.
Wow. Well, that's a whole other podcast, isn't it?
Probably.
Yeah. Okay, so you're trying to meet the needs of providing this kind of housing for people who so desperately need it and can afford to pay for it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you started 2 years ago. How?
The first 18 months was really research, understanding what the problem was, understanding what the impediments would be to building hundreds of these per month, identifying those, and then working with, as I said, various local agencies and the state to get rules changed so we could build at scale. That's most of what we've done. All that's behind us now. We'll build our plans to build about 500 units this year.
Roughly. Have you built any yet?
We built two. They were prototypes. We really needed to figure out what the impediments were going to be to build. And one of the things we found is you couldn't remodel an existing garage. You had to tear it down. But that was not permissible up until January 1. AB 68 lets us remove the existing structure and replace it.
So let me ask you this. Would it have worked for you to remodel some garages?
No.
Or was it just
we did two. We did two of them and found it didn't work. The problem was they were built to be a garage 70 years ago. There's no footings, so you end up having to change out the entire foundation and lifting a 70-year-old garage so you can swap out the foundation makes no sense. You may as well put in new walls, and then once you're doing that, you can put it in and make it energy efficient, and it's easier to build something new than try and remodel that 70-year-old garage.
So you have two prototypes.
We have two that are two that have been built. They were used to figure out what we needed to change. And we start our first flight of four, starts construction in 10 days or so. And I said we'll plan to build about 500 of them this year.
Okay, so the two that you have, what's the status of them? Are they lived in?
Yeah. So the first one was actually the homeowner bought it. About a third of the units we build, the homeowner just buys outright, and she's using it for her family.
I was going to say, can they buy it?
Absolutely, yeah. So what we do is the homeowner will lease us the space, but they can buy it back anytime for $79,900. And about a third of them do that immediately.
Okay, and so can they rent that out then?
They buy it back, they can do whatever they want with it. Of those who buy back, roughly half are using it for family reasons.
Sure.
And the other half are renting it out.
I was going to ask you because...
And I say we've only built two. That's what we know from the homeowners. We have probably 60 or almost 60 leases signed now. So we know what the homeowners intend to do with it.
Wow. Is this being done elsewhere?
It's being contemplated, but as I said, to do this at scale required a set of laws, and those laws were signed. So Governor Newsom signed AB 68 and other bills at our ADU in October with a bunch of other legislators. That law took effect January 1.
Okay, so let me ask you this.
I'm 7 days into being able to do this.
Well, Happy New Year.
Thank you.
So the person who buys it back, couldn't they just jack up the rent then so it's kind of then now no longer affordable like you're
of course.
Trying? They could.
Of course, but it's still one more unit of housing.
Okay.
And at the end of the day, affordability is a function of supply and demand. And if we can get more supply, you'll start addressing the pricing.
All right. So your goal is to build 500. Is this just L.A. County?
Yeah.
Is that all you're operating in is L.A. County?
We've got two units. It'd be hard to stretch further than that.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, I need to get this built and functioning effectively in this local area before I go elsewhere.
So the homeowner bought the one of the prototypes. What's the other one?
The other one is being used as a show home right now, and then the tenant will go in there probably in March.
So you have the tenant already?
That one's interesting. The homeowner actually identified the tenant, and in her case, and it's probably one of the most gratifying parts of this, I came into it thinking homeowners would be overwhelmingly driven by how much money they would make. Mm-hmm. What we found is about a third of the homeowners actually are doing it in part for altruistic reasons.
Well, it's funny you say that.
And this homeowner has that view.
Because when I heard you talking about this, I can think of people I would want to help.
Mm-hmm.
I would want to say, hey, I have a place for you. That would be neat. Still, you know, $1,300 is expensive for some people?
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Nothing we can build is going to be great for everybody.
Right.
But it's less than what you'd pay in that same neighborhood for a far better experience. For many people, it's an amazing solution. We'll take Section 8 vouchers, so that helps. And this one homeowner I'd mentioned, actually, her she's interesting. She recently retired. She's frustrated by computers and is constantly going to tech support at one of the local stores. As it turns out, the person who works at that store in tech support is homeless. And our homeowners decided that's who she wants as the tenant.
Oh, that's beautiful. I bet you're going to see a lot of beautiful stories come out of this because, like I said, how many of us, I mean, I think we all know somebody who we know could use some help with housing.
Mm-hmm.
To make their life a little bit easier.
Particularly if it's close to where you work. The insecurity of having... we refer to it as housing insecure, and that's what most of our tenants are.
Okay.
They are uncertain, or their life is dictated in many ways by the amount of time it takes to get to where they're going to sleep that night, and they're uncertain if they'll get there. And that insecurity causes a lot of stress.
Sure.
And if we can address that and do it cost effectively and at scale, could do a lot of good things.
Okay. What are your hindrances right now?
The only hindrance right now is the need to normalize the idea of having an ADU and a tenant back there. And we talk to homeowners and most of them, well over 90%, say, this is strange. I've never heard of anything like this. And they're right. It's as strange as the idea of getting into somebody's car and telling them where to drive you. But that'll come around. And our ability to focus in within the communities we're in and as we build and people see it, and they see their neighbors collecting the income and tenants who are serving their community and walking around on the streets, that'll come around. That's just a bit of time.
I think people who have a back house, and that's a common thing in L.A. as well, they often rent that out. It's that kind of concept, right?
It's exactly that.
Yeah.
And for people who have that, if they do not have it permitted, one of the changes in the laws that happened is that you can now go get that permitted, and it'll be inspected, and they'll give you a permit, and the only requirement is if you're not in breach of the building code, they'll give you, I think it's 5, it might be as much as 10. Years to bring it into conformity.
And you'd want it permitted because?
I think you want something permitted, firstly, because if you're going to sell your property later, that's where you can get value for it.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay.
That's the largest reason.
Okay. All right. So you're kind of launching for 2020, right?
Yep.
Where have you seen the most support, government-wise?
It's been everywhere. This is such a large problem that now, I don't have a real estate background. I've heard from friends who do how challenging it is to build something, in, not just in L.A., in many cities. And we've just found the opposite, tremendous support from most all of the agencies we've had to approach, for help, as I said, with changes in rules or interpretations of things at every level of government. That's not been an issue. There just haven't been any real hindrances.
Are there any concerns of density issues? You know, because obviously now you're putting more people onto a property.
None expressed. And then when you filter through and say, what does that really mean? Can the infrastructure support it? Well, yeah, we're adding a person to the property, but that person, the addition doesn't have any a lawn. The incremental water consumption is less than about 40 gallons a day. Mm-hmm. So it's a meaninglessly small amount, and it would have been consumed somewhere anyways, probably a lot more. The incremental energy consumption is, as I mentioned, incredibly low. We're not creating traffic. In most cases, we're taking more miles off the road than adding to it. So that's not an issue. We've had people, as we were talking in communities, who would say, well, you know, I don't like this. It's going to change my community. And you know what? Change always has some people who fear it or oppose it. The frequency of that's been incredibly low, yeah, and massively offset by the support we get from the schools, the churches, who see this huge problem they have and a solution being presented.
So it's not like it's a home and then now an apartment complex is going up right there on the property.
No.
It's a small space.
It's literally one more person, maybe yeah, two, living there.
Mm-hmm. And then here's my question, though, too. So you guys have controls right now over the tenants with the places that you are leasing.
Yep.
But if you sell to the homeowner, then it's basically on them to, you know, do the tenant.
Actually, about half of our homeowners who are buying out are asking us if we'll keep managing it. Mm-hmm. They don't want that hassle.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it sounds like a great idea. Are you getting approached at all by other communities, cities, states who say, what's going on here? What do you got going on here?
Constantly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And asked if we will go to those markets. The simple answer is not right now. We have to make it work properly mm-hmm. here before we try and make it work properly elsewhere. Mm-hmm. But, you know, by this time next year, I'd like to think we can start moving up to the Bay Area.
Is L.A. harder or easier than other cities?
For a variety of reasons, it's easier.
Because?
Well, the first is I know the city, so okay, that helps a lot. Mm-hmm. And I have relationships here, so I'm able to call people and ask for help or guidance. And, you know, I'm learning how to do this as well. I already know with certainty that the local agencies and government are highly supportive of trying to find solutions for affordable housing. So that helps. Geographically, what we do works better where land is flat. Hmm. LA's got a lot of flat land. It's a lot easier to retrofit a garage somewhere in the flats than it would be. We wouldn't even look up in the hills. Too complex to do the foundation work. It just adds too much cost.
Okay. So you mentioned San Francisco. I'm thinking hilly San Francisco.
This doesn't work in the city of San Francisco. Gotcha. If you go down to Santa Clara, San Jose, not so hilly, it'll work very well.
Okay.
It works best in neighborhoods that were built between about 1905 and 1957 because that's where the detached two-car garages are. In October of 57, the way people built tract homes changed and they went to the ranch style mm-hmm. and pulled the garage to the front and made it attached. So areas where there was a lot of construction that period of time, and LA was one of those areas, work really well. Chicago would work really well. So there's a number of markets, cities and states that have changed the rules. Oregon is very ADU friendly. Seattle has become ADU friendly. Montgomery County, Maryland, Austin, Texas. And I think as we see success here, and this starts proving that it does create incremental housing, other cities will say, hey, and we should do this too. But so, thankfully for us, the entire state of California has these rules.
So what is your long-term goal with this idea?
I don't know that it's long-term. We'll build 500 units this year. We should do about 2,500 in LA next year. By 2022, I'd expect we're at about 12,000 units a year between in California. I haven't thought much beyond that yet.
Mm-hmm. And who do you do this with? Who's your support team?
We have 17 people in the business right now. That's going to grow substantially. They do construction, property management, marketing, design, all the functions that the business requires.
It's called United Dwelling?
Correct.
How'd you come up with the name?
Actually, my son came up with it.
Uh-huh. Is he part of the business?
No. No, I don't really believe in that.
Okay.
He helps out. He's intrigued with it. He's actually a senior at USC.
Uh-huh. Okay, very good. Is there any other nuggets you want to share with me? I mean, it sounds fascinating. I love hearing what you're doing. I actually would love to see what you're doing.
Well, you're welcome to come look. Yeah. I mentioned the one unit is a show home, mm-hmm. So you're welcome to come over and see it.
Yeah. Any other thing that have surprised you about this or impressed you or given you hope about Southern California's affordable housing crisis?
I'm confident it's resolvable relatively quickly. What we're doing, we partner with others. A community land trust that wants to do this can use the techniques that we do and could get into doing it. We've actually already partnered with one to present a proposal for workforce housing. It's a great workforce solution for a company that has a lot of employees commuting long distances and challenged by it. In many cases, there are thousands of properties within a mile of a corporate headquarters where the homeowners might say, hey, I want somebody from XYZ Corporation living here. Mm-hmm. And that's getting more cars off the road. The stuff I've been excited about have been the people. I've gotten exposure to people that I just wasn't seeing in my day-to-day life. And I'm really impressed. And as I said earlier, the altruism of a lot of the people that we're meeting, their willingness to say, as this one woman did, she said, I learned what you do. And from that moment, every time I looked at my garage full of junk, I felt guilty, realized you could be somebody's home. That's been really neat.
As a venture capitalist, were you into philanthropy of some sort in another way?
Those are two separate things. Venture capitalists financing businesses, that's what I did. Philanthropy is a personal thing. And, yes, I have been, but that's independent.
Was there a certain cause? Like, I do a lot of foster care work. Mm-hmm. Was there a certain cause or something that spoke to you?
My wife was a teacher, and we mm-hmm. do a lot around the education area.
Mm-hmm. And who knew you'd be here?
I certainly didn't.
What does she say about this?
She loves it. Actually, yeah. She was having lunch about a year and a half ago with a close friend of hers and talking about what we're doing, and that friend ended up becoming my first employee.
Okay. And are you working with Mayor Garcetti, too, on this, or his team?
With his team, yes.
Yeah.
The mayor's office has been really supportive.
Wow. Well, many years ago, I did a story with President Jimmy Carter and the building blitz that they do with Habitat for Humanity. And I remember how the community came together to support this concept of can we do something? Can we pick up a hammer and just, help out and get somebody into a home? So this is kind of a 2020 version of making a difference in our own communities.
I think so.
On an individual way with your own property.
Yeah, it is. It's a way for a homeowner to have significant incremental income. And then the way our model works, we lease that space for 15 years. 10 to 25, it depends, whatever the homeowner wants. But when we're done, we leave and they still own the ADU free and clear. So from a homeowner, aside from collecting kind of $4,000 to $10,000 a year is their share of the rent, their property value will increase by, depends on the neighborhood, $140,000 to $200,000. And when we leave at the end of the term, that's all theirs.
What about the upkeep of the property? Because you are changing the makeup then of a neighborhood. So let's say mm-hmm. you have a street of these that were just single family homes, and now they have a tenant property on their property.
Yeah.
So what about
So we maintain, since we're the tenant, we're renting the space, we maintain it. We do everything. So we maintain it. We maintain it. When the tenant leaves, we repaint it. We take care of it. If there's a leak, that's our problem. We do all the maintenance on our units, whether it's one on a street or 10 or 12 on a street.
Much like somebody who owned an apartment building would maintain
exactly.
the apartment.
Exactly.
Wow.
And then when we build it, the driveways are 70 years old and people need to walk down them. Our tenants walk down the driveway to get the streets. So, if the driveway's damaged, we need to repair that so it's safe to walk on. A bunch of the sidewalks are heaved, and we'll just fix the sidewalk in front of the homeowner's house so that our tenant, when they walk out, and we put lighting in for that.
So what haven't I asked you?
I don't know. We've covered a lot of subjects on this. I think you've covered most things. You're good at this. You have experience.
I've asked a question or two in my lifetime. I think it's fascinating. Like I said, you know, my big concern is I work with kids in foster care who emancipate from the system, and the issue of housing for those young people. So we all have, I think, our area of concern. I had talked to you about, you know, just walking outside of here of Olympic and Bundy, Fox 11 News, where you see people sleeping in their motorhomes right there.
Yep.
Or, you know, you go down towards the 405 freeway and you see people, you know, homeless people on the streets and in their tents. So I think we're all concerned about what's happening in Southern California in 2020. I like what you're doing. I'd love to come personally see it sometime.
You're welcome to.
Okay, Stephen Dietz of United Dwelling. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Wow, fascinating.